Sit back, it's time to get groovy. Question, do you remember that movie?
Welcome back to Remember That Movie. I am the third Alejandro Rosa on IMDb.
And I'm Steve Johnston, and I am not on IMDb.
And we are back for another episode and another movie. This week, this day, this moment, it is
now.
Steve's. Steve is holding the grand baton for this film because it was his choice, so I will let him get us started.
Very good. Last episode, we dealt with a dystopian future that just honestly upset me deeply. And so I figured we should visit a dystopian future that I have visited before and I remembered kind of liking. So we went back to 1976 and viewed the sci-fi classic Logan's Run. Now, for me, this one was a classic film, something that one should have seen back when I was in high school. That was kind of the feeling about it. It was referenced in things, people mentioned it in other productions. It was sort of an important piece of cinema from way back when. So my friends and I went out, rented it, sat down and watched it as a group. And I remembered really liking it back when I was in high school. We'll see how my opinion might have shifted now that I am older and wiser. Alejandro, I am going to wager money, or I would wager money if I had any, that you had at least heard of this film.
Yes and no. Logan's Run is the kind of title that's up there with things like Tron, Soylent Green.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's these films that you've sort of... Dune. I would actually put Dune in there.
Okay.
You've heard about them. You have no idea what they're about, maybe, or maybe they just missed you or whatever. This one, Logan's Run, is for me. I'll put it in the same section as Dune. I knew there was a Dune movie.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it was based on a book. I knew nothing of either. I didn't even know that it was based in the future. That is how little I knew about this movie.
Very good. As you mentioned, this movie was based on a novel published in 1967, written by William F. Nolan and George Clayton Johnson. Relatively quickly, the rights were acquired by MGM and legendary sci-fi producer George Pal. Unfortunately, it fell into development hell. A writer by the name of Richard Maybaum wrote a script based on the book. Richard Maybaum is a name that, if you are a James Bond fan, you probably recognize because he wrote or co-wrote most of the early James Bond films. He wrote a script for the movie. Pal and he had some discussions over kind of the direction that they wanted to take the movie. George Pal was toying with the idea of including some allegories or allusions to current events to kind of make it of the time of the late 60s when he wanted to bring this movie out. Maybaum didn't want to do that, and so it never came to fruition. Pal's original intent was to release the movie in 1969 because in 1968, a couple of very famous science fiction movies had come out and were very popular, and he was hoping to capitalize on kind of the sci-fi popularity that was going on at the time. Now, you have a quizzical look on your face.
I'm assuming it was Dune and Tron.
No and no.
Darn it.
One of the movies we actually mentioned briefly in our discussion on Ice Station Zebra, because Ice Station Zebra replaced this movie on all of the CinemaScope screens. Do you recall what that one was?
I actually do. 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yes. The other movie that came out in 1968 was Planet of the Apes.
Charlton Heston.
So George Pal wanted to keep this ball rolling, wanted to get Logan's Run into theaters in 1969, and it just could not be done. George Pal ended up leaving MGM and actually going over to Warner Brothers to produce an entirely different movie in the early 70s. Our final producer, Saul David, took over the project in 1974. The screenwriter for Soylent Green was actually brought on to try and fix the script that Maybaum had originally written. Stanley R. Greenberg toyed with it a little bit and came up with the concept for Carousel, but following that, he left the project. Following Greenberg's departure, our credited writer, David Zelig Goodman comes in and basically writes a completely new script.
With the exception of the carousel.
Goodman made one other major change to the story. In the book, the age limit is 21. He upped it to 30. This was a logistically good move because that really opened up the pool of actors they could now choose from to fill the roles. Directed by Michael Anderson, best known for Around the World in 80 Days, which won the Oscar for Best Picture in 1957. And the film Dambusters from 1955, which, if you're me, will mean something.
And if you're me, will mean absolutely nothing.
We might have to change that at some point.
Speaking of, have you watched Soylent Green?
I have not watched Soylent Green.
Guess what just made it on the podcast list? Okay, who is in this film?
We'll start with Michael York, who played the titular Logan, Logan 5, a very famous British actor. Made his breakout film debut in 1968, playing Tybalt in Romeo and Juliet. I know him from the 1971 action thriller Zeppelin. And again, that's another movie that only means something to me and probably no one else. Where I think you will have come across his name is he played D'Artagnan in the 1973 version of The Three Musketeers and its sequels.
The 1973 Three Musketeers. I did not watch that either. When I was a young lad in a beautiful Puerto Rican island, they opened up a little store in the mall. It was one of those stores that was from the outside you had to go in. That's not important. Anyway, here's what's important. It was kind of, I think, an early dollar store where everything was super cheap. I was looking around, and at this point, I guess I was already fascinated with movies. I think I came out of the womb this way. That's not important either. But what is important is that they had a bin. A big bin in this store. And do you know what it was full of?
Was it full of cheap movies?
No, it was full of Michael York's autobiography. I didn't know who Michael York was, but he seemed to be an actor. I was like, Mom, can I get this? Can I get this? And she was like, okay. And so I took it home. And it had black and white pictures of him, I believe, like in plays and possibly in movies. Maybe even this movie, okay? Maybe even. I don't remember any word in it.
Beautiful.
Not for Michael York. Who is listening to this and thinking, my autobiography ended up at a dollar store, in a mall in Puerto Rico? Damn.
And not even on a shelf, just in a bin.
Just like where you get the discount DVDs, yes. Fast forward. I still don't know anything about Michael York, except that now I know he was in Logan's Run.
Have you seen Austin Powers?
Yes, but not in many, many years, actually.
He was Basil Exposition.
Well, that is news to me.
Okay.
That's how long it's been since I saw it.
It made me kind of sad that I was trying to think of more recent films that he has been in, and that was the only one I could think of, because that's the only one of his that I have seen recently. And
I know his face as an actor that I have seen in films before. Unfortunately, sorry, Michael, I don't know what those films are. But anyway, who else is in this movie?
Joining Logan on his run is Jessica Six, portrayed by British actress Jenny Agutter.
I also have a Jenny Agutter story. No, I don't. Go on.
Oh, you tease.
I'm sorry. I couldn't help myself.
She is an Emmy and BAFTA award-winning actress. I know her, oh goodness, from the 1968 BBC television teleplay The Railway Children, which again means nothing to anyone but me.
There might be someone out there, Steve. Somewhere out there.
So if anyone listening has seen The Railway Children or Zeppelin, please post a comment somewhere. I'm darn curious. Continuing down the cast, playing Francis Seven, who is a friend of Logan and ultimately becomes his enemy, Richard Jordan. It's funny, earlier you mentioned Dune because he played Duncan Idaho in the early version of Dune. A couple more names of note. Playing the Doctor, we had Michael Anderson Jr. Yes, he was the director's son. No, nepotism was not involved. He had a very well-established career by this point. Playing the Doctor's assistant, we have a small role played by Farrah Fawcett Majors as Holly 13, probably most famous for Charlie's Angels. This was actually her third film role.
Wow.
Voicing the robot Box, we have Roscoe Lee Brown, an Emmy Award-winning actor and director, a frequent guest star on many TV series.
His voice did sound familiar, and I couldn't figure out where.
And lastly, playing the old man, we have Peter Ustinov. I want to say he has come up on the podcast before, but I could not figure out if that was true. He's an Oscar, BAFTA, Emmy, and Grammy winner. Did you notice who did the music?
Yes, I did. I wrote it down. Our podcast favorite, Jerry Goldsmith, who has more credits. Actually, if you just listen to our podcast, you'll learn about all his credits because we talk about him constantly.
He comes up a lot. Do you remember when we spoke about Legend?
I hope so. We did two episodes.
I suggested that the perfect soundtrack would be a split between the two soundtracks, where you'd have Jerry Goldsmith orchestral for The Outside and Our Heroes, but then the electronic sounds for the bad guys and then in the interior dark scenes.
Yes.
Jerry Goldsmith actually took that approach for this movie. He wanted everything that was inside the city to have kind of that techno-electronic sound. And then once Logan and Jessica got outside the city, that was when the full orchestra was supposed to kick in.
Very cool.
So that is our cast of characters. That is how the movie kind of came into being. Should I regale you with a synopsis of the plot, sir?
I think we must. It is tradition.
It is tradition.
Whenever the gentleman is ready.
It is the year 2274, and what is left of humanity resides in a domed, sealed-off city, shielded from the wasteland outside. Inside, everything seems like a blissful utopia. Things are bright and happy. People are unencumbered by things like money or jobs. In fact, their very existence is one of pleasure. Whether it be physical, emotional, whatever you want, everyone is just there to have fun. Quite a lot of that, actually. The price for this blissful existence, though, is that as soon as you turn 30... your existence comes to an end through a great ritual known as Carousel, in which you are encouraged to be renewed. Not everyone who turns 30 wants to be renewed, and so they attempt to flee, and these people are hunted down by an elite police force known as Sandmen. Logan, our titular character, is one of these Sandmen who takes great pleasure in hunting down those who try to run. His most recent quarry had an unusual charm on him, and when he goes to the main computer to turn in what he found, the computer pulls him aside and informs him that the symbol that he has found is that of an Ankh, and the Ankh has ties to a underground movement known as Sanctuary. Logan is tasked with a special mission. His life clock is accelerated so that it appears he is approaching his 30th birthday. Under this disguise, he tries to seek out Sanctuary. He becomes the runner that he himself hunted just the day before. With the help of a young lady named Jessica, whom he met, who happens to be wearing an Ankh symbol on her necklace, he manages to duck down the twisty back passages of the city and make his escape, but he is pursued by his friend Francis, a Sandman. Once outside of the city walls, he and Jessica discover that those that have come before them have all been killed. They push forward out into the wasteland of the world. There, they discover an old man. They've never seen anyone over the age of 30. Deciding that Sanctuary just simply is a myth, they return to the city to try and spread the news. They try to stop one of the carousel rituals, but are arrested. And when Logan makes his report to the central computer, it simply cannot accept that Sanctuary does not exist. It overloads and starts destroying itself and the city, and the inhabitants are then thrust forth into the wasteland, where they meet the old man, again, having never seen anyone over 30, ever. They are intrigued by him, and everyone seems oddly happy and optimistic as the city explodes behind them.
All right, so let's just start by saying that this movie starts with text. How many of these movies have to start with text, Steve?
The opening text just explains that it is the future, that humanity now lives in this domed city, and while you are reading this, the camera is panning over a very impressive model.
I knew when I saw this that I went, oh, Steve's in his happy place. Here's a model of the city with little things moving in it.
Longtime listeners of the podcast will know that I do enjoy me some miniature work, especially when it's done well.
And it is done well.
For 1970s, this is great. The exterior shots of the domed city are fantastic. Inside the dome, those shots are great. It falls into one little trap, which is the bane of anyone working in miniature, and that is that water does not miniaturize. So you can tell if you look at it for more than a second that, yeah, that pool's like 6 inches deep.
I love that this film starts out with so many concepts that, as somebody who didn't read the book, I had no idea what they were talking about for the first 10 minutes.
Even if you had read the book, apparently it would not have helped. This movie was actually suggested by my wife. She had read the book, wanted to see the movie, so I put it on the list, and then it was just pure happenstance that I got so pissed off at Waterworld that I decided it should be next. That opening card came up with a description, and from my right I heard, oh, so nothing like the book then.
Boom. The first burn, two seconds into the film. I have to say, I kind of appreciated it, because when you're doing world building in a film, you only have a certain amount of time. What you often see is, in the beginning of a film, you'll hear a lot of exposition. For example, Carousel. In a typical film, you would have one character talking about Carousel to another character and sort of kind of explaining it, even though they both know what it is. They're explaining it for us, the audience, so that we're caught up. This movie does not do that.
Does not do that.
They start talking about stuff and they don't explain it. And I found myself writing like, oh, what is a Sandman? What is the arena? What is a runner? And it does remind me that certain films, especially I think older films, I'm not downing newer films, but definitely some older films do this. They just make you work for it. Or they'll sort of explain it to you in the process, but they don't spoon feed it to you from the beginning. And I did enjoy that because it left me with, oh, I'm going to just have to discover what this stuff means. And that was kind of cool. I would like to say that when we are in this wonderful land, it looks like a mall.
There's a reason for that. One of the amazing things about this movie are the sets. Some of them obviously were done up on sound stages. But the Great Hall, the arena where the gigantic sculpture of the hand is, that is actually the interior of the Apparel Mart at the Dallas Market Center, which is a vast wholesale merchandise mart in Dallas. It was relatively new. It had this sort of futuristic designs on the inside. They happened to scout it as a location and went, yes, this is great. So it looks like the interior of a mall because it is the interior of a mall.
And back then, the future looked like a mall.
Very quickly, we are introduced to the ritual of Carousel. What did you think of that? Because when I watched this back in high school, it was kind of this trippy thing that I'm being shown that I do not fully understand, but I'm starting to pick out details based on what's going on.
Imagine an arena. Everybody comes in and sits in the chairs. And then in the center, imagine there's like a giant jewel, and then these people come out in white robes in a circle around the giant jewel. They put their hoods down, and you see that they're wearing white masks, and then they rip off their capes, and now they have what I can only describe as flame-themed bodysuits. And then they start floating through the air, and then they start catching on fire little by little. That's Carousel.
So the only thing you forgot is that the whole thing is rotating as they do this.
That's right. It's rotating while everyone's cheering these people on because of, what is it called?
Renewal.
Renewal, because somebody's going to make it. They don't explain this very well. They start floating. And so you're like, is it whoever makes it to the top? Wins? Do they get renewed? I don't understand. So far, everyone's just dying. And while these people are suddenly catching on fire or whatever, the crowd is going wild, like, yeah, do it, you can do it, renewal, renewal. Again, this has not been explained much at all. You're just introduced to this concept, and you go, wow, it's like you took a carousel, a beautiful carousel of horses, and then you took everything away and made it a hellscape nightmare and called it Carousel. That's what I thought about it. And then by the end of it, I'm like, I feel like everyone's dead.
You'd be right.
Did they ever actually explain? Because even though I know what they do, why are they called the Sandman?
This brings us to another quote from my wife. It makes no sense that they called them Sandmen. In the book, when you turn 30, you're expected to report to a sleep center where you go to sleep. Those who do not want to and run are then hunted down by Sandmen because Sandmen will put you to sleep.
That makes way more sense.
Yes, it does.
I like that. Way better than Carousel.
Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, that is a little...
Just a little kind of, I don't know, important plot point that they just decided, who's going to notice? We're going to put people in masks, in flame leotards, and have them float. It'll be fine. Nobody's going to notice that we never explain what the Sandman is.
The technical aspects of Carousel are kind of interesting because on the set that was constructed, the carousel on the floor rotates. What you do not see, or we do not see as the audience, is that there is a second turntable mounted up high, which is rotating at the same speed as the one on the bottom. And from that turntable are all of the strings that the actors are being pulled up by so that they can continue to rotate at the same speed as they go up the column of air towards the ceiling.
And you do sort of see the strings, even though they tried very hard to hide them.
Yes, yeah.
You know, but that's fine. We're okay with that. Special effects, we respect you where you were at the time.
We then get what I think is a little bit of character insight into Logan and Francis, because while Carousel is going on, they essentially like get beeped that, oh, there is a runner in the foyer. Please go take care of him. So they go out and start shooting at this guy in red who's just trying to run away. Was it me, or did they seem to be enjoying hunting this guy perhaps just a little too much?
Super fun. They love that. They're like, we got a runner.
So my wife commented that they're lousy shots. And I said, no, I think they're just toying with him because they keep firing at him. And like the floor that he's standing on will burst into flame, or the column he's standing next to will suddenly smoke and smolder.
This is absolutely hunting man for sport, because once you become a runner, you know, you're persona non grata. You're done. You're toast. So now it's like, all right, now you're just giving me an excuse to, hunt a dude or lady. They're equal opportunity when it comes to that. They'll hunt anybody.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And then we have, I have to say, the weirdest introduction of a character ever, which is Logan deciding it's party time.
Oh, yeah.
It's time to find a mate for the evening. And he gets a little controller, and it makes people kind of appear.
This is the 1970s version of futuristic Tinder.
Absolutely, yes. Except that they teleport to the person. And he's like, oh, no, not that one. Oh, no, not this one. And it's called, was it the circuit?
I believe so, yes.
And clearly you sign up to be on the circuit. Because
yes.
When he and his lady are together in this scene, and she's like, no, I'm not into this. He's like, well, then why did you sign up for the circuit? Like, if you don't want to do this, why are you signed up?
It's one of the things that I did like about this movie that obviously I didn't pay any attention to when I was a teenager. The whole thing is based on consent of both parties.
Yes. And then here's a fun part. He gets a notice at some point during his, you know, stuff with Jessica. Later, not when they're doing the, which they don't end up doing.
Which they don't, right.
Which they don't. She's like, I'm not interested. But when he gets his mission or whatever, that he needs to pretend to be a runner in order to gain their confidence, in order to find out where Sanctuary is, he takes her to, he gets a notice saying that there's some violent activity, and he's like, okay, well, you know, you can come with me. The computer says, entering a reservation for violent delinquents, which they refer to as cubs. What in
yes.
the world? You know how every futuristic sort of dystopian thing has their happy place, and then you realize, oh, right outside the happy place is the bad place? This is like layer one of the bad plays, where the cubs are, which are youths.
These are 9 to 15 year olds.
Who I guess are just delinquents.
This is not very clearly explained in the movie.
A lot of things are not clearly explained in this movie.
The idea is that as part of the society, there are no family units. There are no mothers. There are no fathers. There is no one raising the kids except the computer. And so what happens if you have one of these youths that acts out, gets out of line, becomes unruly, you know, just wants to cause some disruption? What do you do with them? Well, in this society, they get sent off to Cathedral, which is this somewhat derelict old building where they join the Cubs. And I do like that they stay with the Cubs up until they turn 16. Because as soon as the jewel in the palm turns green and they get to 16, the Cubs kick them out and they're expected to just rejoin society.
So also, in case we forgot to mention it, everyone has jewels on their palms that change colors depending on how old you are.
I'm surprised that it took us this long to mention it, given how central to the story those jewels are.
Everyone has been bedazzled with one of these at birth.
Yes.
You have it when you're born. So at some point, Francis is chasing Logan and Jessica, and then they're like, quick, let's hide in the love shop. This is clearly an adult funhouse. You run in, and the music changes.
You run through a curtain of some gas that's being piped down from the ceiling, which I assume was some sort of hallucinogenic.
Yep.
To heighten the experience.
They start running, and all of a sudden you're like, wait, they're running in slow motion. And then people start coming out like, yay! And it's just nudity. It's just naked people going like, yay, join us, kind of thing. But it's all in this weird slow motion music. And they're trying to get away because they're just trying to get through the love shop. But everyone in the love shop is high and ready to bang. And then at some point, Francis runs in and here come the naked people. They go, yay, another person to touch. And you're just like, what am I watching?
Yes.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Okay, so we're just going to jump around because there's just too many things to cover. We got underground. We got pipes. We got running.
Box. Before we get to box, I do want to back up. After they exit Love Shop, they go down this impossibly long staircase and are met by the actual, like, resistance people who are going to usher them on towards Sanctuary. Except they don't trust Logan because he's a Sandman.
Right, Sandmen are bad.
At which point, Holly from the doctor's office comes in.
We skipped that scene, but yes.
There's a scene,
there's a doctor's office. It doesn't matter.
It does kind of matter because the resistance has been trying to kill Logan. He goes to a doctor to have some plastic surgery to change the look of his face so that he's not recognizable. The doctor is part of the resistance, so he attempts to kill Logan. Francis kind of arrives on the scene, and Logan ends up fighting with Francis and kind of shoving him to the side, which signals to Jessica that, oh, no, Logan is actually on our side.
That's right.
Now they are in the hands of the resistance. They don't trust them. And Holly bursts through the door
with all her Farrah Fawcett hair.
All this scene made me laugh because Jessica is saying, no, Holly, tell them what happened. Holly is very dazed and just goes, I don't quite remember what happened. Holly, don't you remember there was another Sandman? Oh, yes, there was another Sandman. She just parrots exactly what Jessica says.
Yeah, then they're like, okay, we'll stop pointing spears at you.
We trust you because two people have said the exact same thing, one right after the other.
This is my favorite. Francis is chasing them. At some point, he blows something up and water comes out. And then Logan and Jessica are wet and they're going down water slides or whatever. Then they get to another section and it's ice. And it felt like we were on the set of Caveman.
I was wondering if you'd make that connection.
And here comes my favorite line. He says, quick, let's take off all these clothes before we freeze or something like that. And then we just get nudity again. And then they throw pelts on. But don't worry, because in about 5 minutes, they're going to run and put their clothes back on and put the pelts on top. And I was just like, wait, but they didn't dry in the ice.
No.
Was this just a way for us to get Jessica naked? I don't know.
I was highly confused at that as well. Had they just kept the pelts and ditched their clothes, that would have made more sense.
But then I guess they realized when they went outside, they would just be nude with pelts. And so they were like, oh, wait, that doesn't work. Anyway, have them put their clothes back on. That's what it feels like.
And we are introduced, as you said, to Box. I love Box.
Okay.
I do. He makes me happy.
What's great about Box is that Box is made out of mirrors. And also what's great about Box is that Box is clearly a man in a terrible costume.
Yep.
And so when he talks, you can see the person inside the mask. Okay. Did we run out of money at this point?
Based on the what appears to be dryer duct tubing used for sleeves, one might think that, yes.
It's pretty terrible. But then, Steve, what do we find out? What does Box inform us of?
Box had a job, and his job was to harvest, and I'm going to quote here if I may, fish, plankton, sea greens, and proteins from the sea. However, he informs Logan and Jessica that many years ago, the fish and plankton, the sea life, stopped coming into his area of this processing plant, I assume, and the runners started showing up. And so Box just went along with his programming, and anything that entered his domain got processed. So every single runner that has made it this far was killed by Box and then frozen, and their bodies are now on display in this long gallery of ice.
Frozen, nude.
Yes.
They escape, they get out, and then they get to Washington, D.C., which of course they don't know. We know, we the audience know, the ruins of D.C. That is what they come
yes.
across.
One of my favorite things about post-apocalyptic movies is when the current inhabitants of the world come across the relics of the old world, what is, you know, currently our world. So discovering the ruins of DC, I kind of liked.
Yes.
It bugged me slightly that it was very obvious that, oh, we just took some vines and draped it over some steps for a couple of the shots. I still kind of liked finding the Lincoln Memorial, looking up at the statue of Abraham Lincoln and going, oh, he looks different.
And then they go into the Hall of Congress.
Before they do, they hear a noise as they are exploring the antechamber, and then a cat exits through the door. And a voice over to my right said, oh, that was supposed to be a tiger.
Again, budget constraints, you know? Oh, we wanted tigers. How about a tabby?
The problem is that if you had a tiger, you couldn't have the old man. And the old man, I am informed, was added to the movie. He does not appear in the book.
Is anything from this book in this film other than the title?
The title and the general concept, yes.
Very general. Very general.
We are in the U.S. Senate chambers, which is currently inhabited by an old man played by Peter Ustinov. And his collection of cats. The cats came from the cat care shelter in West Los Angeles and lived on the soundstage for about 2 weeks while they shot everything. The doors to the soundstage were set up as double doors, two sets, each exits, to ensure that no one got out until filming was finished.
I really liked this bit of the film because I really liked him. I loved the old man. There was a warmth to him that was just delightful. It was such a huge contrast to everything we'd seen up to that point. And then Francis has made it all the way to where they are, and they get into a big fight, he and Logan. I actually really liked Francis, even towards the end. All he is trying to do is protect Logan, because he's not a villain per se. He is a friend. He just doesn't understand. And of course, they have to fight to the death, surrounded by cats in the Senate chamber. Hilarious. And then at some point, beating each other with Old Glory, with the American flag.
An old, tattered American flag, but yes, yes.
And then our friend Francis is dead. I love the fact that Logan, first of all, we have a love story, blah, 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 blah. But then we have our hero decides what? We need to go back to the mall. And what is the great reason? People need to know about old.
Old people exist.
And you can be old.
Your life doesn't have to end at 30.
Yeah. And Carousel is a myth. Carousel, you know.
Carousel is a lie.
It's all yes. a lie. I was with Jessica. She's like, yo, let's just stay here. Let's just be together and just leave it at that. And I was like, yep, that sounds like a good idea. And he's like, no, we must go back. I said, if you go back, they're going to kill you. I mean, they're already wanting to kill you anyway. But he's like, no, we must go back. We must go back. And we need to take the old man with us so that they can see old.
Old.
As you described earlier, eventually Logan breaks Siri. And then the people see. The people see old. And then the mall catches on fire and explodes shortly after. And everyone is happy. And everyone's touching the old man.
This ending. I was shaking my head a little because, yes, we see, you know, the one of the girls reaching out to touch the old man's face because they've never seen wrinkles before. And everybody's happy. Logan and Jessica have the biggest smiles on their face. And then we cross-dissolve to the city burning.
It says the end, and then there's an explosion.
Then during the closing credits, you see the city smoldering, just smoking. This is one of those films kind of like Snowpiercer, where you think, oh, it's a happy ending. Wait, hang on. No, humanity's screwed.
These people don't know how to take care of themselves.
No, they do not.
But you're not going to grow old, actually. You're all going to die because you don't have any skills.
Most of you aren't going to survive.
I have to ask. So what did young Steve think about this film? And then compare that to now Steve.
Young Steve really liked this film. He thought it was an excellent, fun, sci-fi, futuristic adventure. I got wrapped into the visuals. It was great. Now that I am older, I have some issues, but my issues are largely with the script. I still love the visuals. I have issues with Jessica and Logan getting together. She should be far more suspicious of him than she comes across.
Yes.
And then I kind of get Logan's motivations toward the end when he realizes sanctuary does not exist. There aren't people outside of the city, but people can survive outside of the city. We need to go back to stop all the killing that he now realizes is going on.
Right. I did forget about that. We're killing people constantly. For nothing. That has to stop.
But that leads to the ending that we just spoke about. He's kind of broken the cycle of death, but the entire society is not going to live an awful long time.
And what about those poor people in the love shop? They don't even know what's going on because they're all high as can be.
I don't think they'll care that much.
That's true. Yeah, I have to say this script has a lot of problems. And clearly, thanks to your wife, we have learned that the problem may have something to do with not following what it was based on and making a lot of changes to plot.
The ending of the book, spoiler alert if you want to go out and read it.
You're used to movie spoilers, but apparently we're going to book spoil you. Go ahead.
Upon the end coming up, my wife proclaimed, "That movie sucked. The book was a hell of a lot better." In the book, Sanctuary actually does exist. I'm not going to say how or what it is, but it is an actual place. And Logan and Jessica make their way across the wasteland to find it. So they never go back to the city to liberate the people. Is that the better ending, though? Because they just start running and they keep running. They haven't fixed any problems. I leave that up to you.
How did this movie do? Did this movie do well?
Originally, it had a budget of $3 million, but by the time the sets, the locations were scouted, the costuming was done, the budget ended up somewhere between $8 and $9 million. However, it made $25 million in the box office and helped MGM get out of some debt that it was in. It was very popular with young audiences. Critics were mixed. Roger Ebert gave it 3 stars, stating, "It's a vast, silly extravaganza that delivers a certain amount of fun once it stops taking itself seriously. 2001 it's not, but it has class." Gene Siskel had a slightly different take. Giving the movie 0 stars, he proclaimed, "Logan's Run unquestionably is the worst major motion picture I've seen this year." A success at the box office, it was nominated for 2 Academy Awards, Best Art Direction and Best Cinematography, neither of which it won. However, it was awarded a special achievement for visual effects, which it shared with King Kong that released the same year. It did very well at the Saturn Awards, where it won Best Makeup, Best Costume, Best Set Direction, Best Art Direction, Best Cinematography, and Best Science Fiction Film. having only heard the title and going in blind, not knowing what anything was about, and from what I have heard, leaving, not knowing what anything was about. What do you think?
I really liked how it looked. Even though, yes, it is very 70s, I still thought there was some really daring choices. I thought it looked cool. Some of the special effects, yes, you know, they will always suffer from special effects when you have an older film. But I really liked it as far as that went, as far as the look of it all. Even the mall look was still kind of fun. It felt right. I definitely didn't like Carousel. I think the script is the biggest problem. Maybe we should have made a movie based on the actual book. That might have been helpful. Is it a good movie? I don't think it's a bad movie, but it's not a great movie. That's for darn sure. I'm kind of in the neutral zone. There are good things in it. It was a fun ride.
I do believe that that wraps up Logan's Run. I now throw the ball over to you, sir. Do you have something picked out for our next cinematic escapade?
For our next film, we're going to move forward in time, but not too far. We're going to 1982's The Beastmaster.
Oh, okay.
Please feel free to leave a comment, leave a review, leave a like, whatever it is that you can do, do it. That helps us very much so that we can keep doing this for the fun of it. Thank you, and see you next time with The Beastmaster.
Sit back, it's time to get groovy. Question, do you remember that movie?